You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Supporting Actor of the Week podcast. Today we're going to take a look at Bat Paro, a significant minor character from this week's parasha, Parashat Shmot. Now, the basic story everybody knows, right? Paro, the king of Egypt, decreed that all the male babies of the Ivrim, of the Hebrews, should be killed. First, he decrees that the midwives should kill them at birth, and when that doesn't work out, he decrees that they should be thrown into the Nile. Moshe's mother places Moshe in a teva, right? Needless to say, he's not yet called Moshe. She places her son in a teva, a waterproof basket of sorts, places him in the Nile in order to avoid this evil decree. Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, spots the basket in the water, ultimately saves Moshe, and adopts him as her own. And she, of course, is the one who gives him the name Moshe. What I would like to concentrate on today is what was going on inside Bat Paro's mind. And to accomplish this, I would like to do a close reading of the pasuk in which Bat Paro first sees baby Moshe in the teva. Shmot Perek Bet Pasuk Vav. Vatiftach vatirehu. She opens the basket and she sees him, et hayeled, the child. V'hine na'ar boche, and behold, there is a na'ar, a child. Generally speaking, na'ar indicates an older child. V'tachmol alav, v'tomer mi'aldei ha'ivrim ze. Right, she has compassion upon him, for him, and she says, he is from the Ivri children. He is from the Hebrew children. There are a number of questions about this pasuk, some of which we're going to see addressed in the Mifrashim, in the commentaries that we're going to look at today. There are also other questions that one can ask about this pasuk, and certainly other explanations of the pasuk, which we're not going to touch on today. So just a quick overview of these different issues. Vatiftach vatarehu et hayeled. First, the pasuk says she opens up the basket and she sees the child. V'hine na'ar boche. Right? Two different words are used to describe this baby that's in the basket. First, he's called a yeled, and then he's called a na'ar. Now, generally speaking, certainly in modern Hebrew, but even in biblical Hebrew, generally speaking, na'ar implies a somewhat older child. Right? So the question that is asked either explicitly or implicitly in some of the commentaries is, why is he first referred to as a yeled? And then a na'ar. Vatachmolalev, right? What exactly arouses her compassion for this baby? Vatomer mi'aldei ha'ivrim zeh. She says he is from the Hebrew children. Right? In what way is that last phrase connected to what came before it, her seeing the child and her having compassion for the child? Now, the general question that I would like to look at today is the one I'd like to concentrate on most, is the question of what aroused the compassion of Bat Paro. And these other questions will kind of be touched on by, you know, while we're answering that main central question. Among the Mefarshim that we're going to look at, among the Mefarshim in general, I think, there are at least three approaches to this question. And we're going to look at these three approaches today. One approach suggests that her compassion had something to do with the nature of the baby. The Ibn Ezra says, V'hine na'ar boche, hayu evarav gedolim, ki'ilu hu na'ar. Right? So first, Ibn Ezra addresses this question of the fact that it says, V'hine na'ar boche, refers to this baby as a na'ar. His limbs, the Ibn Ezra suggests, were large. Right? He was a big, perhaps I could add, fit, right? A strong baby, as if he was a na'ar. We're not talking about a scrawny little newborn, but rather a large child. V'ratahu mahul, and she saw that he was circumcised. Right? This is the Ibn Ezra's addressing of the question, what do we make of the phrase, mi'aldei ha'ivrim zeh? Right? that she notes that he was one of he was a Hebrew child, right? According to the Ibn Ezra, she saw that he was circumcised. And then Ibn Ezra concludes, "Uva'avur yofyo chamla alav," because of his beauty, she had compassion on him. Right. So whether this beauty is connected to the fact that he was a big, possibly strong child, or whether it was a separate thing that he was just a cute kid, that's how the Ibn Ezra understands it. Right. There was something about this child, his charm, his beauty, his whatever it is that babies have that make them so nice. That was what made her have compassion on him. A similar approach is found, with different variations in the commentaries of the Sforno, the Malbim, the Hamek Davar, right, all of whom write some variation on the theme that it was his looks or his strength or the size of the baby which made an impression on the princess. The Ramban suggests that the baby had a strong cry, right? He connects the fact that he was a na'ar, right, that he's called a na'ar, to the fact that his cry was very strong. Now, this might yet be, and it's the strong cry which arouses the compassion of Bapharel. So this might be connected to what we saw already in the Ibn Ezra and the other similar Mefreshim, that the strong cry indicated that this was a strong, big baby, right? Very often, like when we hear a baby cry, we say, "Oh, has a good set of lungs," right? So maybe that's what the Ramban is suggesting. But it's possible that this is connected to the second category of answers, the second approach to this question of the compassion of Bat Paro, such as we find in the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, "Lefi shehaya boche, lekach v'tachmol alav." Right? The Rashbam says, because he was crying, because this baby was crying, she had compassion for him. Right? So that could be what the Ramban is saying. Not that the strong cry indicated that he was a strong baby, but that the strong cry emphasized his crying, which aroused the compassion of Bat Paro. And this is said explicitly by the Rashbam, that it was the baby crying which aroused her compassion, which, you know, is a very natural thing, right? It's not unusual for someone who sees a crying baby to have compassion on that baby. A third approach is found in the commentary of Amos Chacham, right, in the Dat Mikra series. There he writes, "V'tachmol alav, kol b'chio orer chemla v'rachamim, v'ichlita lahatzilo." Right, so the first sentence in this commentary of Amos Chacham is exactly like the Rashbam, right? It was the crying of the baby which aroused her compassion, and she decided to save him, right? But while his commentary starts off like the Rashbam, he then goes off in a new, in my opinion, very significant direction. Vatomer miyaldei ha'ivrim ze, right? She says he is from the Ivri children. V'dibur ze hu habitui lechemlata shel bat paro. This phrase, Vatomer miyaldei ha'ivrim ze, is an expression of her compassion, of Bat Paro's compassion. Klomar, ma umlal hayelad hazeh, shemishum shehu ivri hu shlach layor. Right? How sad, how forlorn is this child, that because he is an ivri, he was thrown into the Nile. Right, and she realized that it was an Ivri baby because of the circumstances in which she finds him, right? Who else would be hidden in a basket and thrown into the Yor? Right? It was clear to her that this child was put in this basket in order to be saved from her father's decree. Her realization, according to this Perush, that this is a Hebrew child, it is not merely an observation, right, due to his circumcision, or for some other reason, but rather it is an expression of her compassion, right? How miskin, how miserable is this child who is being killed just because he's an Ivri? These different takes on the story are not just different interpretations. They completely change the way that we look at Bat Paro. In the first scenario, right? The first category of interpretation. Bat Paro is swayed by the emotional pull of something beautiful or strong, right? She sees a beautiful child, and she is moved to make sure that nothing happens to it, right? Or to take this beautiful child as her own, right? Because he is so beautiful. In the second scenario, it's not the physical quality, right, but the psychological well-being of the child which affects the princess. Here is a child who is clearly distressed, so she has compassion for it. One might argue that the second is a loftier motivation. One might wonder, according to the first interpretation, right, what would she have done if the baby had been small and ugly, right? Whereas having compassion for a baby who is crying is a little bit more democratic, right? We don't just save the pretty babies, we save all babies who cry. Now, be clear, none of these things are bad reasons for saving a baby. Like, anyone who saves a baby from certain death is a hero. Right, but it's interesting to understand, it would also be interesting to understand the cultural context that these commentaries were written. But all of these, you know, suggest very specific reasons why Bat Paro would have saved this baby. Both of these interpretations, right, see Bat Paro's defiance, right, her saving this baby who was sentenced to death by her own father, as circumstantial, right? She wants to save the baby that her father wanted killed because he's beautiful or because he is sad and pathetic, but it's circumstantial. The third interpretation, right, the one suggested by Amos Chacham, however, in my opinion, is something altogether different. Here, Bat Paro's defiance against her father's decree is not circumstantial, but it's ideological. She is not saving the baby despite his being an Ivri. She is saving the baby because he is an Ivri. Right? The story is no longer about a woman who adopted a baby against her father's decree because she was won over by his smile or by his crying. It is now about a woman who acts defiantly out of ideological protest. Right? If I might compare two eras in history without claiming that every detail is the same, it's as if Hitler's daughter, had he had a daughter, had taken a Jewish baby and saved it from the crematorium. Right? That's what we're talking about here, according to the last interpretation. With this interpretation, Bat Paro's role is suddenly taken, right? Somewhat subtly, but suddenly taken to a whole new level. Now, if I might bring in a somewhat unorthodox type of commentary, there is a scene in the movie The Prince of Egypt, you know, the animated version of the story that we're talking about now, right, the story of Moshe, which I believe hints very subtly but very cleverly at this idea that we saw in this last interpretation of the action of Bat Paro. And this is seen, this interpretation is seen in a scene of the movie, in The Prince of Egypt. And the scene is interesting despite the fact, or perhaps because of the fact, that it's actually not part of the original biblical story, right? The movie takes some license with the story, changing things, adding things. And this scene that I'm about to describe is not part of the original story, not part of the authentic story of the Tanakh, of the Torah. And to the best of my knowledge, it does not appear in a Midrashic source as well. But nevertheless, I think it is an incredibly insightful reading of the character of Bat Paro. In this scene, there is a celebration underway in the palace, in Paro's palace. And in the celebration, we see all of the values, right, which in the Torah are seen as negative values, of ancient Egypt, particularly the values of an all-powerful king who can do whatever he wants because he's viewed as the divinely appointed king, right? He is God, essentially. In this context, right, in the context of this party that's going on in the palace, a tribute is paid to Moshe, right, who at that point is like a prince in Egypt, and to his brother, Ramesses, who is the biological son of Paro and the one who's next in line for the throne. And the tribute, according to the scene in the movie, is none other than the beautiful captive Tzipora, right, who we know later on from the Torah, it becomes Moshe's wife, but at this point in the story, we don't know this. The beautiful captive Tzipora, who is given to Moshe, And he's told that he can do whatever he wants with her. And in the scene, he proceeds to ridicule her in front of the entire crowd. As he, just as he does that, right, she falls into this pool of water. She's soaking wet. And suddenly the scene shifts for 2 seconds to Bat Paro, right, the adopted mother of Moshe, who is seen staring down shamefacedly, right, at the immoral, insensitive behavior of her sons, right, particularly of Moshe. Right? 2 seconds, we see this look on Bat Paro's face in the movie. Moshe sees this disapproving look of his adoptive mother. This, as the scene continues, leads him to allow Tzipora to escape, right, so she can go back home. And while he is following her path to see where she's running off to, he runs into Miriam, right, his biological sister, who reveals to him that he is really a Hebrew, which leads Moshe to protect the Ivri, who is being beaten by the Mitzri, and by killing the Mitzri. And the story, you know, as it's told in the Tanakh, in the Torah, continues from there. It is no coincidence in my mind that I'm sure that in this movie, all of that, right, Moshe finding out who he really is and killing the Mitzri and the whole story that takes that follows after that is a ripple effect of that 2 second look that we see in Bat Paro's face, right? That 2 second look of disapproval that Bat Paro has for basically everything that ancient Egypt stood for, right? She is part and parcel of the ancient Egypt, but in that second, 2 seconds in the movie, her disapproval of what Moshe is doing shows that she disapproves of everything that Egypt stands for. Now, back to the original biblical story that we're dealing with in our Shiur today. We're so used to thinking of Bat Paro as the one who saved Moshe from death, right? That he was basically going to die because of the decree of Paro. But now we perhaps understand that she wasn't the one who only saved him physically from death, but that she really is the ethical template, and who knows, perhaps the explicit teacher of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The interpretation, both in this movie, I think, as well as in what is suggested by the Amos Chacham in Dat Mikra, is that she didn't just save him physically. She was the one who taught him how to behave ethically, how to stand up, even if you were in the midst, if you were part and parcel of something, how to stand up against something if you see that it is wrong, which, of course, is something that Moshe exhibits over and over again as the story continues to unfold. There's much more that could be said about the details of this story, but I'd just like to conclude with a few other observations for what happens in the rest of the story. Right, all the while that this drama of the baby in the basket is unfolding, Miriam, Moshe's sister, is watching from the side, right, from the moment that he's put into the river by his mother, to see what would happen to him. And she's, you know, quiet. We don't hear her saying anything this whole time. You know, presumably she's watching all along, because she does show up, right, later in the story. And suddenly in Pasuk Zayin, something encourages Miriam to speak up. Right, she's quiet this whole time. She's kind of watching from the side, and suddenly she speaks up. Now, let us remember that we're talking about Miriam, a slave, talking to Bat Paro, the princess. Right, so Miriam had to be very encouraged to suddenly speak up and talk to Bat Paro. And so clearly there was something about Bat Paro, right, that encouraged her that this is someone that she could speak to. Now, if you'll indulge me one more moment to return to the movie version of this story, which again I think was incredibly well done in terms of trying to understand specifically the character of Bat Paro. While Miriam is watching Moshe float down the Nile, right, she is like every moment when he narrowly escapes danger, be it from an alligator or a crocodile, or whatever, or a hippopotamus or boats or whatever it is that he comes along the way on the comes by his way on the Nile, and she's gasping and she's terrified for his safety, and then the basket floats by Bat Paro, and once again she gasps, right? She realizes that it's her Royal Highness herself that's about to open the basket, and she's terrified. Oh my God, why is this the person who had to find the baby, right? Why the daughter of the person who wants this child to be dead? But suddenly, she's in this in the movie, she sees the compassionate expression on the face of Bat Paro, and she understands that her brother will be safe. And I'd like to suggest that once again, this is a very good reading of the text, right? There was something about Bat Paro, right? That Miriam standing from the side and watching Bat Paro find her brother, there was something about Bat Paro that Miriam suddenly realized was good, that she was sincere and that she was kind and that she would really take care of her brother. And if you consider the conversation between them, that she allowed Miriam to bring a Hebrew wet nurse, right, to come and nurse Moshe, and that, you know, perhaps she might have even guessed that Miriam would bring Moshe's mother, and nevertheless allowed her to do so, and even agreed to pay her, right, a slave, to nurse her own baby. This is certainly qualities and details in the story that come to light, right? Then Miriam's intuition was indeed correct, right? That she was able to speak to Paro because she could see, right, that Paro's goodness was very real, right? Very real and very strong. We don't hear, right, in the actual story in the Torah, we don't hear about Paro, hear about Bat Paro ever again. But I'd like to suggest that her imprint on the person who now becomes, from the end of the story till the end of the Torah, the central character of the entire Torah, the imprint upon him by Bat Paro is very significant and very real. And, of course, very, very important to recognize.